Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 84 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. I'm Billy, and with me as always is Dave.
Hey guys.
And we're here to talk comic books, specifically new comics that are coming out on Wednesday, August 12th, as well as a few other things. Right off the bat, Dave, you saw Fantastic Four this weekend, right?
I did. I liked it.
That is... unpopular opinion.
Yeah, I kind of feel like people might like it in hindsight. I'm gonna
reverse Watchmen.
Yeah. You know, I'll run down why I think so. You know, first of all, you know, when I first started hearing things about this movie, I was, you know, very wary of it, and I think we talked about it on here too, like. That they were making it realistic and
right.
and down to earth, and that just, you know, that's the opposite meaning of fantastic. So I was like, whoa, are you guys like totally off on this movie? Because like that doesn't sound like the Fantastic Four. And then you know, I wasn't really sold on the trailers until the one that they released at Comic-Con where they showed Ben Grimm and Reed as kids working together and kind of building a friendship from the start. And I was like, oh, you know, that's a really cool take on like, you know, showing their friendship and, you know, kind of showing like their family. And I'm like, you know, that's where I was like, you know, this might not be like a, like stick to the comics version
right.
of Fantastic Four. But it's going to be, you know, it's going to hit the key elements. And I feel like it needed, like, Fantastic Four's 60s origin needs updating anyway. And I feel like, you know, like, it's not like, you know, so I'll leave it at that for now. So I saw that. And then I saw some interviews with Josh Trank where he was talking about the really grounding in reality was the science. And okay. So, like, you know, going to other realities and him doing research into CERN. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a little different than making it seem like grim and gritty. Like, because that's where my mind went, you know, because that's usually what you get when you hear, like, down to earth and realistic with superhero movies. But that he was making it a true science fiction movie, I think, really worked with the idea of the Fantastic Four. And I was like, oh, well, I'm in again. Like I'm interested, you know. You know, it might not be the best movie, but I'm interested to see what this is about. It doesn't hurt that all the actors are great actors, you know.
Yeah, they're all great actors. I feel like there was no box office drawing actor in this movie as opposed to almost every other superhero movie. And I don't even mean as leads. I just mean as in like any of the supporting roles. Like no one knew who Chris Hemsworth was when Thor came out, but you did have Anthony Hopkins and Rene Russo right. in the movie, you know, playing minor characters just to like maybe pull people in.
Right. Here you had like a lot of good actors, but not like name actors, you know, right. like Michael B. Jordan, I think is the biggest of all of them. I forget the guy's name who plays Reed, but he's like in those Divergent movies, and
yeah.
I think he was just in that that movie about the drummer.
Yeah, Whiplash, which is an excellent movie. And I read something today. You know, he's in Divergent, but he plays like a minor role. And while
I'd say he's like a secondary character, but like
a supporting role, I should say.
Yeah, he's a supporting role, but he's a main piece in that movie.
And like as many accolades as Whiplash got, it's a movie that I think only made like $14 million over its, you know, box office
right.
run. And he's been in a bunch of indie movies too, like, The Spectacular Now, which he's gotten praise for. It's just that these are movies that don't really bring in much money.
Right. I'm sure he will be a big name actor. I'm sure all these people will be big names, you know, in
right.
the future. But no, none of them were like big names right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest star is Jamie Bell, who played Ben Grimm. And, you know, his biggest role was a decade ago in Billy Elliot.
Yeah, he also played Tintin.
Yeah, that's true.
So you know, that's what made me go, oh, you know, I've got a more optimistic view of this movie. But I went into it thinking, you know, hey, this is going to be more like your Batman movies, your Chris Nolan movies, your even like if you go your Tim Burton Batman movies, those you look at and you go, that's a Tim Burton movie. That's a Christopher Nolan movie. Like their takes on the character that and I felt like this is going to be more of a take, whereas you have your Marvel Universe where their takes, they're all like in a cohesive feel of the Marvel Universe. They do a really good job at that. And I think that's why you see directors jump on and off those movies so much. Mm. You know, like you see that with Thor, you saw it with Ant-Man. And I think it's a little bit where like you have the studio having more control than maybe the director in some areas. And, you know, that's not a criticism. It's an observation, I think. And so I saw the movie. I thought it was pretty good. Like I liked it better than Captain America 1. I liked it better than the Hulk. Mm. Which, you know, like aren't the best of the Marvel movies, but you know, they're decent, you know. And I thought the first movie was decent. I thought this movie was decent. I thought it was good. I'd give it like, you know, maybe like 3 out of 5 stars, which is my average. Like, yeah, this is a good movie. I enjoyed it.
That's really good compared to all the reviews that it's been getting. Because I think on Rotten Tomatoes, it was at like a 9%, which is meaning that it was not getting positive reviews. And, you know, that's aggregated over like many critics' reviews.
Right. And I feel like people were hating on the movie before it came out. Mm. Like ever since the first trailer came out, people were like, you know, knocking on it. And I'm like, okay, well, there's no way you're going into this movie with like
an open mind.
And, you know, I tried to do that. I was like, all right, let's just go in. And, you know, it was funny. The choices they made were like to have them go over to another dimension instead of the cloud, who went over, how they incorporate Ben Grimm into the family, the relationship of Sue and Johnny and her dad is just it's great. It's like that was one of the best parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. Sarah really liked it.
Yes, and your wife, who's not a comic book person, she does.
Yeah, the movie, she had no idea who any of these people were, and she was like, "Oh, that's a good movie." And we got up, and like, people were like, "Oh, I guess it was better than I thought," and you know, like, "Yeah, it was okay." And she said, "Why did everybody hate this movie?" It was like, and so in the end, like, it was a superhero movie, but at first it was a science fiction movie. The first part of the movie is very science fiction-y, and it's great. And then like at the end, it kind of feels a little bit of shoehorning of a superhero movie into it. And that's where it felt like it twisted a little bit. Like, you know, you got a little bit of a different movie, so it wasn't as even. It's no Hancock. Like, it wasn't like as dramatic as that movie. But, you know, that would be my one criticism. And
when you say it's no Hancock, you're saying it's not as good as Hancock or not as bad as Hancock?
It's not as bad as Hancock. Okay. And what I was referring to is that halfway through Hancock, it becomes like another movie.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It turns from like a comedy into like a dark
and like, not very good movie.
Yeah. And so like it's not like uneven as that.
Okay.
But like, you know, there's like a twist where you're like, okay, now they're trying to make it more of a superhero-ish movie now that they're at a certain part. And I feel like that probably was the studio, but all in all, it was, you know, it was great. I laughed a bunch of times. I thought like them transforming into the powers they had, he brought a real horror element to it. And like them being scared of what's happening to their bodies was like great. And, you know, I think the characterization of everybody was pretty much on, you know. You know, I've heard critiques that they're or criticisms that they're too young to be the Fantastic Four, you know, but you know, if I step back and I said, if this movie, if you said this was a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, and you threw in references to the other heroes in the universe, and you know, in that way, I feel like people would have liked it so much better.
Really?
And I feel like it's, I feel like, you know, Marvel gets a little bit of a pass with those types of things. Or they get like bumps in the ratings, you know, cause like, you know, you're in Captain America 2 and like you get out and all the people talk about are like, oh man, did you hear? He talked about Doctor Strange. Like, I'm not saying I'm not saying Captain America 2 was a bad movie, but like,
because it's like maybe the best comic book movie we've had in the past 10 years.
Right, right. I mean, that's a bad example of like, but I feel like more of like Avengers 2. Like, there was a lot of like, you know, people getting excited about what's to come rather than the movie itself.
Gotcha.
And I'm not saying that like Marvel makes bad movies. That's not my argument. My argument is that if you said this was an MCU movie, people would have gone in with a totally different mindset, and I think it would have gotten a lot better
reaction. If someone told you this was an MCU movie, would you have believed them?
No. Okay. Only because that there was no references to the other parts of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay, but you're saying it stands up next to other MCU movies, like Marvel Studios movies.
Yeah, like if you threw this up next to Thor or the first Thor, Captain America, Hulk, I would say it's like around the quality of those guys.
Wow. I feel like that's like a bold statement right there. I haven't seen the movie, so I'm just going off what I've read. But yeah, that sounds like high praise for this movie.
I mean, relatively. Like, I thought those were all like just, you know, okay, good superhero movies.
Yeah, no, but that's what I mean, in that it seems like the reviews for this movie are like, this movie is not good.
Right, and I feel like unless it was like a masterpiece,
right,
it was going to be knocked down, because look, it's a superhero movie and we all love superhero movies, but there's a bit of a formula to them. And, you know, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of like, what was everybody expecting?
Yeah, I will say this. If there is a bump in ticket sales next week in Fantastic Four, it should be due to you. Because you're definitely doing a good job of selling me on it, because I was not planning on seeing this movie at all. Like, just everything I've seen about it, from the trailer to the billboards, like I was like, this movie is just going to like pass me by. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's way better than the Fantastic Four movies in the past.
Okay.
And Daredevil is way better than Elektra.
Right.
It's like, you know,
Elektra was like pretty much like that was another movie that when that movie came out, I'm like, this looks ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, that's what I would think that I would have been walking into after seeing the reviews, you know.
Gotcha.
And it's not that. And like, I hate sounding like I'm championing the movie, championing the movie to be a great movie, because it's not a great movie, but it was a good movie. Like, I went in, I enjoyed myself, I had fun. Like, that's what I want from a superhero movie. Like, it wasn't too deep, but you know, it was a little uneven, but it was, you know, I had a good time. My wife had a good time, and we left the theater and got dinner. It was good night. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And that's cool. Yeah, I will check Fantastic Four out eventually. I don't know if I'm going to pay to see it in the theater, though. I think I might wait until it's on DVD.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely check it out at some point or another.
Right.
I haven't seen
the last Fantastic Four movie, Rise of the Silver Surfer. That was another movie that I was just scared away by the reviews.
And I watched that on DVD, and I was just kind of bored with it.
I saw the first movie on DVD, and I was like, oh, I'll watch this, and then I'll Netflix the next one. And then after watching the first one, I was like, yeah, maybe I'm good.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like it might be one of those movies that, like, years down the line, people will be like, hey, oh yeah, I, you know, like maybe that kids who weren't reading the internet, you know,
right,
or reviews of the Fantastic Four before seeing them, before seeing the movie, might discover it on Netflix, DVD, you know, whatever. And it might be a more well-liked movie down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, and critics aren't like the last word, you know, on a movie. Like,
oh yeah,
I love Mallrats, and that was a movie that was universally panned when that came out. I remember it seemed like everybody, like every critic everywhere, hated that movie, and like no one had. I was like, this movie is hilarious. I don't know what people are talking about.
Yeah, and one more thing that I read in most of the reviews, they barely talked about the movie.
Right. A lot of it is more to do with like Joshua Trank coming out and his deleted tweet, which admittedly is not good for a movie. But right. The problem with, I think, a lot of the reviews too might be that Fox embargoed the reviews until, I believe, Wednesday. So nobody was allowed to publish reviews before Wednesday, even if they had been to a screening before then. And I think the trades broke a day early, but most newspapers, you know, weren't able to run a review until Wednesday, maybe Thursday.
Right. Yeah. So I that was like one of the things that made me think, like, after seeing it and like liking stuff, I'm like, well, like there's only like a couple that were like, you know, Kate Mara's performance was a little dry, and yeah. I was like, okay, well, all right.
The reviews I've seen have mostly said that the film itself is boring. That it doesn't have like the action that you would expect in like a summer blockbuster movie. And that so and the way you're talking about it being a science fiction movie, it almost sounds like a Michael Crichton kind of movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it as like a summer blockbuster. I would put it as more of a science fiction movie.
So then in that case, it was probably mismarketed.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
Well, so. Definitely wasn't successfully marketed because you saw the movie this weekend and nobody else.
Yeah, we did not. We saw it at like a 4:30 screening and on Friday.
Right.
And or showing, rather. And yeah, there was a handful of people in the theater.
Right.
And like I saw Ant-Man around that same time, and that was pretty full.
Oh wow. Yeah. All right. Well, so yeah, enough about Fantastic Four.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
We've devoted enough time to this movie but that's cool. I'm glad that not only did you enjoy that, but you're not afraid to like say, hey, this movie wasn't that bad.
Right, right. You know, it's one of those things where like I went online and people are like, hey, sorry. I mean, I'm just not I talked to people on Facebook and I was like, look, it's, you know, and it's not bad as this. And they're like, well, sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. I'm like, not offending me. I'm just saying that, like, it was a bunch of people bashing the movie who hadn't even seen the movie.
Yeah. And well, that's what I was looking on Facebook, and a lot of people were posting the Variety article about how no one was going to see Fantastic Four on Friday. Like on Saturday, they ran an article saying that it did terribly on Friday. So people are like, oh, don't go see this movie. Go see, you know, Mission Impossible instead. But they themselves hadn't seen the movie.
Right.
That said, I probably would have gone to see Mission Impossible 5 instead of Fantastic Four if I did go to movies this weekend. What I wanted to do was watch Chronicle, and I didn't get a chance to watch that because I've never seen Joshua Trank's first movie, Chronicle, which is supposed to be very good. Also has Michael B. Jordan in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to go see this. I'm going to watch this weekend. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to try to watch that in time for next week. So yeah, so Fantastic Four. Dave liked it. I haven't seen it. If you liked it, feel free to comment on the show page on Tuesday night, TuesdayNightMovies.com, and let us know what you think. Because if a lot of people do like this movie, maybe I will go see it. So we got some news, more DC TV news.
Yeah. We could just sum these up pretty quickly. I think, cool news for Supergirl. They're casting the Red Tornado. Which made me wonder if they're going to do like a new Earth 2 version of Red Tornado, who is Lois Lane on in the new Earth 2.
Mm.
And
I hope not.
I hope not too. But I was like, oh, well, that would tie it in with like Supergirl a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, I guess we'll see. The Flash has cast a Wally West.
Yeah, and they're going for the new 52 take on the character, it looks like.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they are
the casting.
Well, I mean, Iris is black.
That is so true. Yeah.
I mean, I guess was... you know, you could still make, you know, her nephew
well,
white or adopted or you know, but
if he's going to be her nephew, I wonder if they are doing the new 52 thing where this guy is traveling from the future into the present.
It's possible. I mean,
because Iris is kind of young. Unless
yeah,
she has a much older sister.
My grandfather was an uncle before he was born.
Yeah, but your grandfather was alive when people had like life expectancies were much younger. My cousin's wife's mom was like one of 10, you know, and it's cost like there. And I'm not saying it's unheard of today. It's just that.
Right. So like we're saying that like Iris is like 25 or something.
Right.
Know? So like, you know, conceivably like she has, you know, a
much older sister or brother.
Yeah. And they, you know, got into trouble. I think it's her brother or no, it's her sister. I can't remember. Mm. But in either case, like, you know, it'll have to be her brother. Yeah. It's her brother who, you know, has a child out of you know, child in like not a great situation, you know, like a little young, you know.
I love how like uncomfortable you sound saying this.
I'm trying to figure out. It's not necessarily uncomfortable, but it's like, okay, so how would this work? And trying to do math in my head.
Okay, because it sounds like, all right, so the brother, you know, like maybe he didn't love the woman that much. Like, what day, where are you going with this?
Yeah.
they thought they loved each other, didn't really,
but they didn't. Like, sometimes that happens, Billy. Yeah. Sometimes that happens.
I was like, I feel like you're sitting me down for like a very important, like a more you know talk.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out the math as I was talking, but you know, like it, you know, say, you know, 10 years ago, when he was 25, you know, that would make the kid 10, but like, say like it was like 18, 19, you know, you could conceivably have like a 15, 16 year old nephew when you are in your 20s.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so yeah, so I think it's conceivable that type of stuff could happen. So, but you know, it could also be a future type of thing, which yeah, could be interesting too.
And then we got Jackson Hyde, but now was he cast already? No, so Franz Drama was cast as Jay Jackson for Legends,
right? And my guess previously on the podcast was that Jay Jackson was a nod to Jay Garrick, and then the Jay Jackson being like the, you know, alliteration like Wally West. This was like a sneaky way to say Wally West.
Gotcha.
So with another person being cast as Wally West, Jay Jackson is definitely not Wally West.
Yes.
One of the creators on DC Legends of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. That's it.
I like that you give those four, like you make that into a new combination each week.
Yeah, yeah.
it is an awkward title. DC.
It is. It's so awkward.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Like, they said it's not a code name for any other DC superhero.
It should be like a working title. That should not be the title of a show.
Right. So anyway, so they said, you know, it's not another name for another DC superhero. Right. So, I mean, it's possibly, it could be something like Fish Mooney on Gotham, but they could also be lying.
That's true. The weighted description of the character is described as a former high school athlete who is injured in a debilitating accident. That to me just screams cyborg.
It does.
Which would be awesome.
That would be awesome. Jackson makes me think Jackson Hyde, which you had brought up before, who's the second Aqualad, Black Manta's son.
Yes.
So, I mean, we could...
And that version of Aqualad was on the Young Justice cartoon and has, like Cyborg, is pretty popular, like in the pop culture sense, more so than Garth ever was.
Oh, yeah, I agree, definitely.
Yeah.
And the coolest bit of news, I think, is that they said that the show will contain elements of Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis Justice League International run. So, like, using that kind of tone.
That's awesome.
In humor with the characters. But no Booster Gold this season. Maybe season two.
That would be fantastic if we got... a Justice League-like show or a Legends of Tomorrow show that gave us that tone of the DeMatteis run.
Yeah, I would be really excited about that.
Yeah. Especially because I think DeMatteis has written for TV before, too, so that'd be cool if they let him write an episode or two.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah. That would be really, really cool.
So, Dave, what's on your 20 for this week? How are you spending $20 at the comic book store?
First up is Secret Wars number 5 by Jonathan Hickman and Asad Riddick.
I was hoping that you would forget that one. not that I like think it's going to be a bad issue. It's on my 20 also, but like I just after last time, I was like,
you have it as $5.
Yeah, I gotta double check that. I thought it was a $5 book, but I think you might be right. I think it's $4.
Yeah,
which gives me a little more room to play with, although not enough to actually buy anything differently. that the cover for this looks awesome. It looks like we're going to see Dr. Doom's battle with the Beyonders.
Yeah.
You're right. It is a $4 book, not a $5 comic. The first issue was $5 and that's what threw me.
I feel like it's been forever since we read the last.
Yeah. Well, they were coming out so fast and furiously, and then, you know, we got, like, a couple extra weeks off.
Right, yeah.
I don't like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, just reading the main series and not too many of the other ancillary titles, it made me, like, kind of be like, where are you? A little more than probably you, who's been reading a lot more of the ancillary titles.
Oh, I've been reading the ancillary titles, but I'm like, come on. Well, I'm like, where is the main series? Like the tie-ins are great. And this is something that I'm going to get to when I go down my list. I think I've actually though become oversaturated with the tie-ins. There's just too many of them. And I realize that like, I'm not keeping up with them as much as I thought I was.
Yeah. It would be hard to read all of them.
Yeah. And expensive too.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of them I'm going to wait till they're on Marvel Digital Unlimited, but right. There are a few that I'm like, okay, no, these are so good. I want to read them now.
Right. And, next up for me is Justice League United number 12. This is like my number one DC series.
That's funny. I was about to ask, is this your favorite book at DC right now?
I think so. Like I'm enjoying Geoff Johns Justice League, mm-hmm. but this Justice League United by Jeff Parker and Travel Foreman, oh man, it's just jumping all over in DC with all different kinds of DC characters. I'm just telling if anybody loved Justice League Unlimited, this is the book for you. And it's got a great writer and a great artist and just...
When you say Justice League Unlimited, you mean the TV show?
Yes.
Oh, okay, nice. And it's funny, and they've got Tony Daniel doing the cover art. It's really like they're gearing this book to you specifically.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, we've heard you've been really enjoying Jeff Parker's writing recently, and you like Travel Foreman on Animal Man. What if we threw in Tony Harris on covers and gave unlimited use of any DC character that that Jeff Parker wanted to use anywhere in time or the multiverse? And I'd be like, what?
Yeah, this could just be called like Justice League for Dave Tomko.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sorry that
JL
I haven't.
JL for D.
Yeah, JL for D. I'm sorry that I haven't given this book a shot yet. I really just need to sit down with it. If they ever do a 99 cent sale and I haven't caught up yet, I will definitely just be buying every issue.
Yeah, you should definitely.
Yeah.
I'm also going to grab Earth 2 Society by Daniel H. Wilson and Jorge Jimenez. Mm. Jorge Jimenez is making this book. He's definitely going to be an artist to look out for. I think he's gonna do some great things.
Nice.
After that, I'm grabbing Rebels number 5 by Brian Wood and Andrea Moody.
Is this the final issue of Rebels?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
I did not see that. But
it just seems like Dark Horse has been doing a lot of 5-issue miniseries lately.
Yeah, I don't know how long this is running for.
Yeah, neither do I.
Then I'm picking up Harrow County number 4 by Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook.
And that's another Dark Horse book, right?
Yeah, that's another Dark Horse book. And Cullen Bunn's it's a horror book. And he's been, you know, just creeping me out. it's a really good read. I suggest people pick it up. And the art is just as creepy and eerie. And that brings me to a total of $19. And I threw an extra book on there because I've been hitting way below 20 lately.
Yeah.
Which will bring me up to $22, which is Green Arrow number 43 by Ben Percy and Patrick Zercher. And when we get into the reviews, I'll let you know. I read all of the Green Arrow books from the end of Jeff Lemire's arc up to this new post-convergence Green Arrow, the first book in the start of this arc. And I've really enjoyed everything I've read. So this
isn't like the start of a new creative team. These guys have been on the book for a while now.
No, this is the start of a new creative team, but also just as good as everything that's been going on. So
gotcha.
So it's kind of like putting a, I'll kind of review the first book of the series just as a primer for anybody who wants to read this. It's a little bit of a horror twist on Green Arrow, set in a real world setting. Like they've placed him in the New 52 in Seattle, not Star City. And he's been in Seattle before in other, like maybe the Mike Grell run, I think.
Okay.
It feels like he's in Seattle. And so it's gritty. It's a little horror-like, and it's good. It's good. The only thing that's a little off for me is the interior monologue. And I don't know if that's Ollie's voice necessarily. It's a little bit too literary. And that's not how I ever see Ollie.
Gotcha. Like a little too Ivory Tower.
Yeah. So, but it's outside of that, it's been a great read.
Nice.
Or that book was a great read, and I read the sneak peek too. So, if anybody's interested, pick up that sneak peek, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. So that brings you to $19 or $22, depending.
Right.
If you count Green Arrow or not. Now, I am very excited for Secret Wars number 5, which we were just talking about. How long is Secret Wars? Do we know? It's not a 12-issue maxi series like the original Secret Wars. Is it 8 issues, 9 issues?
I don't know. I completely forget. I was wondering the same thing myself. I was like, how much longer do we have?
Yeah.
It's still October, so.
Right. So we've got plenty of time, and if they're double shipping these, I think we've got a few issues ahead of us. I think it seems like Marvel's been doing these events as 8 or 9 issues these days.
Yeah, that's about about what it is. So there's only like a 3 month break in between their next event.
Now I'm hitting at least one book from Dark Horse, Marvel, DC, and Image this week. It's like I'm hitting the cycle for the 20. I guess the true cycle would have been if my fifth book was not a second Marvel book and was like an Archie comic. Unfortunately, Archie number 2 from Wade and Staples isn't out yet, though. So my second book, jumping over to Dark Horse, we've got Eltingville Club number 2, written and drawn by Evan Dorkin, who I've loved since I've been in high school. He's just hilarious. He did Milk and Cheese and Dork, which were two funny books, just filled with like strips, or like 1 to 2 page stories, maybe 5 pages at most. This Eltingville Club book comes from a strip in Dork where it's about this comic book and action figure and sci-fi club. And there's, you know, the comic book guy and like the toy guy and the sci-fi guy and the role-playing game guy. And they are all the biggest jerks in the world. Like they are every comic book stereotype, comic book fan stereotype. Of course they're all male. Of course they're all white, you know, mm-hmm. and like varying degrees of overweightness and underweightness.
Right.
But it is great. Cause he uses this just to like eviscerate really like all the worst things about comic book fandom. So anytime Evan Dorkin comes out with something where he's both the writer and the artist, I will jump on it immediately. Then back over to Marvel for Inhumans Adelon Rising number 4, which has been one of the strongest and most original of the Secret Wars tie-ins. You've got Charles Soule, who was doing Inhumans for Marvel before Secret Wars, art by John Timms. The premise is that there is a club that meets underneath where the clock is in Grand Central Station in New York City. It is a place where people from all the different sections of Battleworld can meet, either to hang out or more likely to like hash out agreements. It's like a kind of like a no weapons bar. And the twist is that the bartender who everybody tells their problems to is Black Bolt, and he is secretly leading a resistance to God Doom out of that bar. So it's partially about that resistance and then also about Doom's people trying to take down the resistance. So there's a lot of like double agents and people turning on each other. But it's been a cool series so far. I'm really enjoying it. And it's got these awesome covers by Dave Johnson that look like vintage, like Spanish Civil War-esque like resistance posters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then jumping over to DC, All-Star Section 8, number 3 by Garth Ennis and John McCrae. Now, this is a big deal for me because I've never read Hitman. I've never read Section 8. Just going strictly by the cover and that Martian Manhunter guest stars, I'm guessing this will be a very funny comic. And I won't need to know anything to enjoy this one issue.
You quite possibly could be right.
Yeah, I really think that like you'll be able to get away with like enjoying this issue without having, you know, to know the backstory of Section 8. And then finally, over at Image from Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, if you are reading The Wicked and the Divine, they're the team behind that. They started together on this book called Phonogram, which deals with music and magic. And they're coming out finally with the third volume of it, which is Phonogram, the Immaterial Girl. I have actually never read Phonogram. I bought both volume 1 and volume 2 on a sale a while ago and never got around to reading it. But I love them on Young Avengers and I love The Wicked and the Divine. So my plan is to read Phonogram volumes 1 and 2 before Wednesday and then go right into Immaterial Girl. And,
wow, cool. Yeah,
and that brings me to $19.
Nice.
So you can have my extra dollar, then you're only going over by, I guess, $1. Okay. I didn't save you. I'm sorry. So what did you read this week?
I read Airboy number 3 by James Robinson and Greg Hinkle.
Nice.
Loved it. It was a little sad. I mean, it was still funny and
would you call this book raunchy? Like, yeah. I feel like, yeah, okay. Because, like...
Like, I think there's like, raunchy humor in it, but, right. like, I mean, it's
but done... It's not done in, like, the douchebag frat boy way that I think people mostly associate raunchy humor.
Right. Like, I think it's done, like, for a desired effect of making the people who are being raunchy look raunchy. Like,
yeah.
You know, like you're laughing, but it's kind of like, oh man, like
yes,
it there's like a darkness to the humor, which you don't usually get in with like, you know, a raunchy.
Yeah. There's a panel where James Robinson has come in his pants and has a big erection and Greg Hinkle has pooped his pants.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh hysterically. But I was like, oh man. And that is the kind of humor too that you will get in like an Evan Dorkin comic, to cite something from my 20.
Right. And so like I think that is played a little bit more for laughs, but then that's like extrapolated on in the comic, and then it gets, you know, kind of heavy, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I thought this issue was great. I'm loving this series. And this is another... how many issues do we get of this?
I don't know. I think it's just 4 or 5 again.
Yeah, because this is not definitely not an ongoing.
Right. I also read This Damn Ban by Paul Cornell and Tony Parker.
Yeah, that's the Dark Horse book that you were talking about last week.
Yeah, it's like a 70s hippie psychedelic band, and it's done documentary style where, like, you know, you're seeing them, like, play it up for the camera and be like, oh, that was all shite. I was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, thinking the cameras are still off. And then
right.
you know, you find out that they talk about, like, worshiping Satan and stuff, and they don't really do it. It's all for the money. And then, you know, they all take the psychedelic mushrooms, and they get a visit from Satan himself. and it's all caught on tape. And it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
So and that's kind of like the premise of where it starts. So yeah, I suggest people grab that. Paul Cornell is a great writer, and you know, I'm sure this won't be disappointing.
Right.
I also picked up DC's Bombshells #3 digital edition. This all will be collected. I know this week. I reviewed some last week. So all three of these chapters will be collected in the first issue that will hit the print stands this Wednesday. It's by Marguerite Bennett and Marguerite Sauvage and Sauvage. It's not Savage. There's a U in there.
Yeah, so, I have no idea.
Sauvage. So anyway, both of them, fantastic, great writing, beautiful art. She does like all the art, the coloring, I think it's maybe digitally drawn, so I don't think there's like a pencil inking type thing going. And
oh, interesting.
That's my guess from looking at the art.
Right.
This chapter highlights Power Girl and Star Girl, and they are both from the Russian perspective of the war, and so it's pretty cool. This is like a really cool book set in World War II. Definitely like all about the female characters and making them strong characters. And it's really cool because, like, you know, the statues that they're based on, like, to me kind of seemed like the anime girls that they had out, where like it was like for, you know, those characters you described in the Evan Dorkin books. Who are like, oh yeah, she's hot.
Yeah, people are gonna masturbate to statues. Is what you're
saying. Right. Yeah. And so like this really, you know, I don't know if it brings validity to those statues or what it does, but like as a standalone thing, this is great. And like, you know,
nice.
The Bombshell statues as they are aren't like as overly sexualized as the anime stuff, but they still have,
anime stuff is like, I would be embarrassed to have that in my apartment.
Yeah, they still have that sexualized nature because that's what they were on those airplane stuff. But you know, anyway, so that's good, and I suggest everyone read that. I also read Green Arrow 35 through 40, which was written by Andrew Kreisberg, and Ben Sokolowski, with art by Daniel Sempre, and Sempre. And Andrew Kreisberg is a writer on Arrow, and he brings Felicity from the show into the comic. And it was a great, like, few issue run. It is kind of like, you know, like when Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb did Batman and like all of like the Batman family comes out and you're like, oh, cool, I get to see Jim Lee draw everybody. Like, yes. It's kind of, it had that feeling that, like, you know, Batman stops by, Lex Luthor stops by, Katana's there, you know, Arsenal's there. He introduces Mia in the New 52. He introduces Dr. Midnight in the New 52. Wow. Like, so it was just like a blast of a run. And like the art was pretty great. And I just 35 through 40, pick it up.
Okay.
And and I also read Star Trek and Green Lantern crossover, which just dropped to $1.99. Pick it up. Beautiful artwork written by Mike Johnson, art by Angel Hernandez and Gabriel Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. And gorgeous art. It's the new version of the Star Trek characters from the movies, and they come into contact with the spectrum of rings, and the rings interact with the Enterprise crew, and it's awesome. Billy, you would love it. It's $1.99 now.
Oh, nice. And there's a new issue of like Star Trek Green Lantern coming out this week, I believe.
Oh, is there? Yeah. Well, I'll just wait till it's $1.99. That's a good price.
Yeah, that's what I do like about IDW is that if they have a $4 comic, a month later, they are dropping that to $1.99. They're not just taking like a dollar off there.
Right.
Yeah. And hint, hint, DC. Hint, hint.
Yeah, yeah. Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Do you read anything?
I read... In Justice League Volume 6, Injustice League, which covers the Amazo virus, which you had read. It basically covers Lex Luthor joining the Justice League through the Amazo virus storyline. It's a big book, and it's fantastic. You've got art by Ivan Rice, Doug Monkey, and Jason Fabok, and of course Joe Prado inking Ivan Rice. Man, Jason Fabok, such a good artist. Like, I thought he was the strongest part of Batman Eternal. He's been great in the Dark Side War, and he was spectacular during the Amazo virus too.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the end of that storyline. Like, it was cool the way they set up Amazo for the New 52. Because we have the android has to exist in the New 52 because that's what this virus was based off of. But now we've got like an organic Amazo at the end of the story.
Right. Some humans who are still infected by the virus, who I kind of said it was like the bloodlines of the New 52.
That's funny. That's exactly what went through my head as I was thinking that. I was like, oh man, DC seems to have like sneakily snuck in bloodlines into the New 52 with the Amazo virus.
Yeah. So that was a great storyline. People should, now that it's in trade, people should definitely check it out.
Yeah. And this is one of those books that I've said it before. I got it from the Brooklyn Public Library. It is the best place to get comics. They are fully stocked and you can reserve them online. It's almost better than going to a comic book store. Like, downside, you don't get books as soon as they come out. Upside, it's free. But that's pretty much all I read this week. Other than that, I caught up on, I made a little headway into Spider-Verse on the Marvel Digital Unlimited app, which remains why I don't read, you know, many new books as they come out, because like every Monday I get an email from Marvel saying, oh, this is what we added to the Marvel Digital Unlimited this week. And I'm like, oh man, it's a lot of stuff I want to read.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I don't have to pay for it. That's, you know, I already paid for it, I guess, with my annual
subscription.
Because I did just get an email saying that they're about to charge my credit card again.
That's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, so right now I'm reading Spider-Verse and catching up on all new X-Men. So yeah, that's about it for me.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and I guess that's about it for this week's episode of the podcast too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and one thing, if you had a problem with last week's episode and were not able to play it, I want to let you know that that issue has been resolved. If you go to iTunes, you should be able to download a fixed copy of it, and that will play no problem. And big thanks to Mike S. of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for letting me know about this. apparently, there is there is something wrong with the file that I recorded in GarageBand last week, and it uploaded no problem, and it looked like it was about an hour long, so I was like, there's nothing wrong with this, but it only recorded the theme song track. So you had like the 10-20 second theme song, and then blank space for an hour, and then a 5 second, you know, outro. But like, it was an hour long track, so I was like, oh yeah, no problem, this works fine. And then Mike got in touch with me and said, he's like, hey, podcast audio cuts out after 20 seconds. And then it turns out that's what the problem was. So I had to go. It was weird. I still don't know why that happened. I basically had to like just re-edit the episode all over again in a new file. Like, there was no fixing that file.
That's weird.
Yeah. Weird and a pain. And also a big thanks to Alex Stone for, you know, giving us a nice recommendation on Twitter this week.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated that. Hopefully we can have him on the podcast soon, because he is super knowledgeable about comics. All right, so that's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be back next week with more comic book talk.
All right.
In the meantime, have an awesome Tuesday night.
All right, I gotta go.
Okay.